a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Oh, yes.
Good morning. We will call the House of Representatives Health and Human Services Committee to order. We'd like to greet our internet listeners as well as those of you that are here with us this morning in the audience. And just a reminder, as we always do, to please turn off your cell phones. We all know the penalty. We don't have to go back over that. I guess we'll just go ahead and call the roll first, and then we'll go into some announcements. Secretary, call the roll, please.
Representative Blake.
Here.
Boomgarden.
Here.
Consett.
Here.
Heard.
Yep.
Ironclad.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Lucas.
Here.
Mosier.
Here.
Nygaard. Romkema.
Here.
Vanderlinde.
Here.
Rave. Pitts.
Here.
And I'm sure there's a quorum.
We do have a quorum. And what I'd like to do before we move into anything else is entertain a motion for approval of the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Representative Curd and seconded by Representative Mosier. Any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same. Thank you. The minutes have been approved. Do any committee members have any announcements or personal privileges or anything? You didn't bring him to Health and Human Services Center, Representative Boomgarden?
Movie pretty quietly, so.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah, I was going to say maybe we'll be introducing him later. Any other announcements, questions, anything? Okay. Well, with that, this morning, and I appreciate your patience as far as that we did start a little bit later this morning. We have a presentation this morning, and it fits into what my goal has been as chair. Is to provide us some information from other aspects of healthcare along with the executive branch that we always have every year, but when the opportunity arises to give us other agencies that serve the state. I think that's important for us as committee members to know what's going on around the state in some way, shape, or form outside of just the executive branch as well. And so this morning we have Mr. Scott Graff, who is the CEO of the Community Health Centers of the Dakotas, and it's one of those types of agencies, I believe, that maybe is under the radar screen for many of us, and hopefully Mr. Graff can enlighten us to what his agency does across the state. Good morning, Mr. Graff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of
Mr. Graff, if I could just interrupt for a second, could you pull your mic a little bit closer so everyone could hear better? And is the green light bright green? Real bright green.
Okay, it is now. Okay, should I start over? Okay.
Sure. Just go ahead with your introduction.
Okay.
Again. That'd be fine, Mr. Graff.
Okay. Well, what I would like to do today is be able to talk about our community health centers across the state. And as I mentioned, they are part of what I would consider our healthcare safety net, a number of different types of organizations providing access to healthcare to our citizens. So what I'd like to be able to talk about is what is a community health center, South Dakota health centers, and then our opportunities and challenges with healthcare reform. And of course, part of my presentation has changed considerably over the last 8-10 days, and we are going to be eagerly awaiting to see what Congress takes up in terms of healthcare reform. I will share with you what we knew about the bills in both the House and Senate that contained elements for the growth of community health centers across the country and what it might mean for South Dakota, and whether that takes hold in any type of bill that might emerge, we'll just have to wait and see. But I would like to make a couple introductions of two of our health center directors who, when I'm done, would be available to answer any specific questions about health centers across the state. We did this presentation yesterday morning before the Senate health, and having the health center directors available was really quite helpful because there were a number of very specific questions. I have Heather Smith, who is our interim CEO of the Community Health Center of the Black Hills in Rapid City. And then we have Rita Wagner, who is our CEO of Rural Healthcare Incorporated with a number of health center clinics in central South Dakota, including Fort Pierre. Well, moving right along, what I'd like to be able to do is just explain briefly a little bit about what is the Community Health Center program and the fundamentals of the program. Community health centers are funded, grant-funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and its agency, what we call the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA. The health centers apply for and receive grants to deliver comprehensive primary health care to populations and areas that are considered medically underserved. One of the key features of the community health center is what we call the community ownership, meaning that they are governed by a board of directors as a nonprofit organization of the population that is being served. So these boards are representative of the consumers of care in the communities that they serve. They must provide an array of comprehensive primary care services and supportive services to promote access to care. Typically what we talk about is, and I'll be sharing, I think there will be a handout coming around that will have a list of the 39 medical and dental clinic sites operated by our health centers across the state. But those medical services, primary care, medical services, typically what you would think of in a family physician's office. Dental offices, we have 7 full-time dental clinics operated by health centers. And then health centers must also make arrangements for a number of other services, including behavioral health, mental health. And we work closely with our counterparts in the state, the community mental health centers, to deliver many of those services. But what's really key to health centers is what we call the supportive services or enabling services to reach out to the populations in the community to get them into care, providing either case management, outreach services, if needed, linguistic, translating services, and transportation. So there's just a number of things that each of the health centers would need to address. In addition to what the health center program is to do is who they serve, and health centers must provide access and serve all patients that seek their service, regardless of the ability to pay, race, ethnicity, age. And I'll speak a little bit more about that. Well, the health center program and benefits to the community, it is a population-based program, meaning that with HRSA, the federal agency, it is a need-based program. Communities apply for the health center grants. And part of the competition for this, and it is a competitive process, is the justification or need in the community. And what I would consider is justifying to the federal government why do federal funds need to be provided to this particular community? What's the justification? And if funded, the federal government agrees to enter into a partnership with the local community group that is developing the program, the board of directors, the organization. So it is a population-based program looking at the health status needs of the community, and that is one of the things that makes a health center unique. Each health center is different in that way because of the uniqueness of each community. So the services that they define and develop is based on what the board of directors defines as the highest priority. So the other things about the health center program is access to care. And as one of the safety net programs where we have hospitals reducing the burden of emergency room, maybe inappropriate emergency room access, and providing and ensuring a continuum of services. As I mentioned, health centers must provide an array of services, not limited to primary care, but ensuring that patients have access to secondary care, tertiary care, other types of services in their community. And so partnership is key for community health centers, reaching out and working with other organizations. And then, again, getting back to the governing board, the consumer board really serves as the voice of the operations of the health center in the community. So that consumer majority board is key. 51% must be users of the health center program services. The other board members can be leaders in the community, and they're encouraged to reach out and seek leadership. So that additional expertise is key to the strength of the programs. So the requirements, as I mentioned, need, the justification for need for these services in the community, the array of services that are required, because we are dealing with taxpayers' money as a grant program from the federal government, a strong accountability of management and finances are required, and so that infrastructure to run the program is key. And then, again, the governance, the board of directors, to oversee the responsibility of the program, the grant funds, the operation of the services, and accountability to the community. Where we're located, I think the handout went around. Like I said, we have 39 clinic sites across the state, medical, dental services, and this particular map is color-coded by organizations. So we have 7 different community health center organizations operating these 39 clinic sites, and our health centers are in, and this will be something I'll discuss a little bit later. We're in the 2 large urban areas and then many smaller rural areas. And because of the features of a health center program, it really draws out some of the uniqueness of these services. So I think later on, if you have questions about what an urban health center is about, Heather from Rapid City could address some of the features, whereas a rural health center maybe one of, maybe the only provider in their particular community of clinic services, or they may be there with a rural hospital and the clinic provider. Some cases there are some other clinics in the communities, but typically in rural areas they serve all patients. In urban areas they may serve a vulnerable population, niche population, a medically underserved population in those areas, so in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. One of the things that I just want to draw to your attention to is those shaded areas. Those are federally designated medically underserved areas. And so across the state, these are typically by county, but we can, working with our state health department, who is the agent of the federal government in this case, they make the applications for underserved areas. We can seek designations on behalf of our program requirements for census tracts. So we are currently working on a project with local community leaders in Yankton. They identified some census tracts in the community based on what they defined as some population needs, and the health department applied the criteria, which is based on poverty, percentage of people, citizens that are under 200% of poverty, health status issues, demographics in terms of number of elderly, and then providers to population ratios in those communities. So we did get the designation in Yankton, and that then allows the community leaders to begin to plan whether they want to apply for a community health center program. But talking about that, then, we like to call the community health center a model of care. So the key features of that is serve all patients regardless of the ability to pay. One of the things that we really need to be clear on is these are not free clinics. They use a sliding fee scale. It's a policy defined by and approved by the board of directors in terms of, based on a poverty index, the percentage of fee that the patients, based on income, would pay. So it is adjusted after they meet the criteria to their ability to pay, basically in increments of 20% up to 200% of poverty. So patients could have zero pay, or what the board might define as a minimum payment requirement, $10, $15, $20, and then a percentage based on family size and income, up to 200% of poverty. So, and then health centers must, charge for their services. So, and to remain viable, the grant funds do not sustain the operation. Typically, it's about 25 to 30% of their operation, and they use those funds to operate their sliding fee program, their adjusted charges program. provide access in areas maybe not served by others. So when you look at the communities where our health centers are located across the state, many of them in communities where there are not other clinic providers, and in urban areas where populations are not being served by other providers or don't have access, maybe because they're uninsured, and typically our urban health centers have a much higher rate of patients that are uninsured. And then the services they provide, comprehensive quality, high quality primary care, and supportive services. So the value, again, just the prevention aspects, looking at the population being served, the chronic care management, one of the key features of health centers is really to bring patients in and then manage their chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension, whatever it may be, in a system of continuity, providing that system of continuity of care if they need to get access to other levels of services, making arrangements with specialists, hospital care, secondary, tertiary hospital care, and other social service programs in their community. So health centers seek to partner with many different programs in their communities. The team approach to a health center, using a number of different providers, we have health centers that have an array of healthcare providers, physician assistants, nurse practitioners working with their physicians, nurses and caseworkers, dentists, hygienists. So it's really a team approach. And being able to work across a medical to dental and perhaps behavioral health, because many patients have multiple diagnoses, and having that ability to within an organization to cross these different services are key. Care for all, and then community involvement, really the key aspects of what a health center program is about. Now, moving into healthcare reform, what we knew before Tuesday of last week, in both the House bill and Senate bill, there was a significant investment in the community health center program across the country. Currently, it's a $2.2 billion program supporting 7,500 clinic sites across the state, across the country. We have 39 in South Dakota. And in the House bill, The House had invested or proposed to invest $23 billion over 5 years, and in the Senate was going to be $19.5 billion over 5 years, both dedicated funding. And this would be to grow access points in areas which may not be served, or for populations that may not be served, with the idea that if additional coverage was provided to these new populations, and it was, you know, being estimated up to 60 million people are out there without insurance, where will they go for care? Part of the solution, not the entire solution, but part of the solution was to have more community health center programs in areas of that for these populations where they reside that are currently uninsured. In addition, health centers, you know, to grow that kind of volume of new healthcare operations, workforce would be required. And so investing in additional workforce, new funding for the National Health Service Corps, which provides scholarships and loan repayment to primary care providers, dentists, mental health providers. And that program is currently in place, but an additional $1.75 billion over 5 years in the House and $1.5 billion in the Senate, both had dedicated funding as well to help grow the primary care workforce to work not only in health centers but other underserved communities that meet the health professional service area, the HPSA criteria for the National Service Corps. And then, in addition, what was contained in the program for workforce was new funding for community-based residency training, primarily for family physicians, but and preference for what we call federally qualified health centers. That's the same thing as a community health center, but FQHC is a center for Medicare and Medicaid provider type for the health center program for that reimbursement for community health centers. So it's quite often a term that's interchanged frequently, used synonymously, but it is FQHC is the reimbursement type for Medicaid and Medicare for the community health center program, creating opportunities for training in health centers with the likelihood, improving the likelihood that these physicians in training will then stay in those health center programs once they finish their clinical training. So opportunity for growth. If this funding finds a place in any bills that should emerge or get reconstituted in healthcare reform, there will be, I think, an effort to try to keep these capacity-building programs in place. So we are still looking at the possibility and planning for how do we work with our communities across the state, and that was going to be part of my discussion and is part of my discussion with you folks, is how the state and the legislature can be supportive of the communities to look at this program. It's, as I mentioned, what's key to this is this is not something we just go and give to the community. You can have a community health center too. It has to be a planned, engaged process by the leaders in the community. The community needs to invite this in. They need to plan. They need to want this for their population. So it has to be a process of the community applying for these funds. And it takes, and it is a complicated program and a competitive program. For communities to get this. We had this last year one new act, what we call new access points. That's the competition program for the community health centers within HRSA. And we had one new one in Rapid City, and perhaps Heather could respond to that a little bit later in terms of where they added some additional services as an innovative delivery model in Rapid City. But the need for additional facilities, clinic facilities, equipment will be required, workforce needs, and then, you know, access for all in the communities that would want to plan and develop a community health center. So opportunity for growth. Getting back to this underserved map, if you look at where and then placing where our current health centers are, there's a lot of counties, and then the white areas are areas that are not currently designated. So there are a number of counties where we do not have community health centers, and the communities within those counties that we need to really understand who and what are the needs in those areas, those communities, and who that we could work with in terms of helping them plan for the possibility of this kind of healthcare service. Then within those areas, one of the striking things that we've, I don't know why we hadn't thought of this, but one of the striking things is the number of communities that, you look at, these are the highlighted counties that are without a health center. And then the striking thing for us is the number of communities of 5,000 population or larger, but not an urban area, that do not have a community health center in South Dakota. Those are communities that we really need to understand what is going on. Are there demographic changes, population changes, people that are having difficulty accessing care? Who are the providers in those communities currently, the clinics, the hospitals? And are they struggling in terms of keeping their healthcare workforce, recruiting physicians, retaining their workforce? And would a health center program that has additional benefits attached besides a grant program for clinical workforce, access to discounted pharmaceuticals, those types of things that the community may want to really understand. So our work ahead is really to investigate and research and understand what is going on in these communities and these counties across the state, and get the word out to the community leaders, the healthcare professionals, the groups that are concerned about access to care, and enter into discussions. And that basically is the discussion I wanted to share, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Graff. And if I might just take a moment for a couple of introductions, and then we'll move into questions from committee members. I neglected to introduce our two pages this morning. We have with us Kayla Wiskus. And Kayla, could you tell us where you are from?
I'm from Garrettson High School.
Garrettson, okay. And we also have Alan Sakian. And Alan, where are you from?
Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Rosenwald High School.
Sioux Falls Roosevelt. Okay, thank you very much. I also want to note that we did have Senator Stan Adelstein, who is the chair in Health and Human Services over in the Senate. He did stop in for a minute, and just in full disclosure, as he did yesterday, he is on the board of the community health centers in Rapid City, and actually we have a member of our committee, Representative Lucas, who's on the board, I'm not sure, just
Horizon
Healthcare, and that's in Howard, or where's that at? Centered out of Howard, so. Okay, thank you. With those introductions or that information, what I would like to do is open it up to committee members, either for Mr. Graff or Ms. Smith or Ms. Wagner, if you have any specific questions, and if we don't, we'll maybe ask those two ladies to give some information. But any committee questions, excuse me, of Mr. Graff, Representative Blake.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Graff, I noticed that there are only two dental clinics included in all these.
Well, that's not correct. We have actually six full-time dental clinics now operated by health centers, and I would need to look at the map. They may not be properly identified, but we have dental clinics in Sioux Falls and Rapid City that are full-time, and then Horizon Healthcare that Representative Lucas is involved with just opened their fourth dental clinic in Westington Springs. So they operate full-time dental clinics in Martin, Howard, DeSmet, and just opened a new one in Westington Springs. So we have six full-time dental clinics. If I may, the other thing that we are doing is when we talk about needing to provide health centers, needing to provide access to dental care, we have been working in partnership with our Oral Health Coalition for the last half dozen years, and we're involved with the startup with Delta Dental and the operation of now the two mobile dental care programs, and our more rural health center sites have partnered with Delta Dental, and we operate about half the time of the second vehicle on health center sites. That vehicle rotates across mostly western South Dakota, but central South Dakota health center sites to bring oral health care to those populations.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further committee questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Graff, thank you for being here this morning and sharing with us. How many health centers are on the reservations?
We have health center sites located on the Cheyenne River in Eagle Butte, Standing Rock, and Isabel, that's kind of considered Standing Rock, then down in Mission, White River, and then Martin in between, who all serve a rather high number of our American Indian population.
Okay. Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Jensen.
Ms. Graff, do your centers provide prenatal care?
They do, especially in those clinics where we have physicians. Now, deliveries is different. There are some health centers that do provide deliveries, but absolutely for prenatal care. And, you know, I would ask, to be more specific in that response, is maybe we could follow up with our two directors that are here.
Okay. Follow up, please. Madam Chair. I'm bringing a bill that would allow for the establishing of birthing centers throughout South Dakota. Would you view that as competition or as complementing what you guys do?
Excuse me, Representative Jensen, Mr. Graff, you can certainly go ahead and answer that, but you can also give general answers as well, because we didn't ask you to testify in a bill, so go ahead.
You know, I only heard about those bills yesterday, so I am not very clear on those bills. We work, our health centers work very closely with their obstetricians, their family physicians, and I don't know what you mean by birthing centers being located across the state. So I would need to learn more about that, but I just generally would be concerned in terms of who's going to be staffing these centers.
Thank you. And I'm sure, Representative Jensen and Mr. Graff, that would be a topic that you could certainly discuss after our committee meeting and be most interesting for you. Any further committee questions? Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Scott, do you do any outreach? Is that part of what the community centers do?
Absolutely. That is one of the requirements of community health centers, as I mentioned before. But supportive services, or what we call enabling services, health centers, much, you know, part of their planned approach is how do they reach out to these medically underserved patients in their communities, the population, and let them know about the services available, but more importantly, develop enabling services to bring them into care. So caseworkers, outreach workers, and in the case of our urban centers, in some rural centers, translation services where we can then directly work. But bringing, engaging, and bringing patients into a system of care, if that's what you mean by outreach.
Follow up?
Representative Blake.
Thank you. Is prevention a part of that?
Yes. Health centers must engage in prevention programs. How, especially in chronic care management, dealing with obesity, hypertension. We are considered part of the public health. We consider ourselves part of the public health infrastructure in the state.
So, is there follow up? Is there any way to measure outcomes based on what you do and what would not be there if you didn't?
Yes, and I would really like to have our health center director speak to their programs in terms of patient outcomes and quality improvement. Health centers have been involved in, for about the last 10 years, these what we call healthcare collaborative programs, or chronic disease management programs, to improve health status for specifically patients with chronic diseases. But I know in both Rural Healthcare Inc., they've been involved in depression collaborative, diabetes collaborative, and a cancer collaborative, and then Rapid City as well. And if you don't mind, I would like each of them to maybe address in specifics what they do for measuring patient improvement, quality improvement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Graff, we do have about 7 minutes left. I do have Representative Consett with a question. We'll go ahead with that. And then if Ms. Smith and Ms. Wagner would have a really quick overview, but I know they have some good information. But let's go to Representative Consett for a question first.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Graff, my question is, what percent of the health care assistance do you estimate that your group fills in general in these communities?
One of the things I neglected to talk about, but the second page of the handout and below is the demographics of our health centers. One of the things that our community health centers as a federal program must do is report annually to the federal government of their programmatic requirements. It's called the Uniform Data Set, UDS. And it's a field of nine series of data fields that they must respond to regarding demographics, health status, financial measures. And the information that I've included on this handout shows you in 2008, health centers provided care to 55,000 people in across South Dakota, and a little bit of the demographics. And then if you look at the breakdown by race and ethnicity, you can see just who comprises the health center population. If you look on the back side, then you would see these are five-year trends. You would see that our health centers are providing care to about 20,000, over 20,000 patients that are uninsured across the state. So, you know, I think what I would consider a considerable provider of care to the underserved in the state when you think about, you know, 10 to 12% of the population that is uninsured.
Thank you.
Thank you. There again, we have about 4 minutes. If you would like to step up, either Ms. Smith or Ms. Wagner.
Thank you. If I can just expand a little bit from an urban center perspective on your question. In Rapid City, we see just shy of 51,000 patients in 2009. So 51,000 visits is what we saw. To give you some indication as to what that is, in the largest, the busiest emergency room in the state of South Dakota is in Rapid City, and they see 51,000 patients. So they're open every day, 24-hour service. We're open 5 days a week. We're not open on holidays. So we've got quite a lot of patients coming through our doors.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I can answer questions regarding the rural aspect. Our sites are located, as you saw on the map, in central South Dakota. We provide care to roughly 8,000 South Dakotans in that area, and that equates to about 29,000 patient visits per year. Our grant represents roughly a third of our entire budget, and right at 300,000 goes to uncompensated care.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for Ms. Smith or Ms. Wagner? Representative Blake?
You were maybe going to speak to the outcomes.
Right. We have been involved with national collaboratives since 2000, and we have a patient registry. We report annually, or excuse me, quarterly, information regarding that. All of our diabetic patients, hypertensives, and some cancer outcomes are reported as part of that. Every patient that is seen with that meets the age criteria is put into this data registry, so we track them on every patient visit. We use that information to provide them with education, to assist them in making informed decisions about their own patient care, rather than directing to them, involve them in the process. We look for community linkages that can help improve the outcomes. And our, for instance, our hemoglobin A1C is 6.8 across the board on our facilities, and that is lower than the national average. We're quite proud.
Thank you. If I might follow up, the average A1C for all of your patients is 6, or the ones with diabetes is 6.8?
That are tracked in a registry, correct?
Wow. Nice. Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might add a little bit, as a board member, as was indicated there for one of the community health centers listed, one of the aspects that we have as all of the community health centers is telemedicine, and we do our board meetings by video conference, but we also have high quality definition ultrasounds and cameras so that a patient can be in touch with a specialist any place. And in fact, the question about prenatal care, we do have a high definition ultrasound where that can be read by a specialist in Sioux Falls out of the mission site, and in particular for we get a lot of younger patients there, younger females that are pregnant. So we can catch those problems early on and get them referred to the specialist before it develops into a bad situation in delivery. They don't do deliveries there because the mission doesn't have a hospital. They usually coordinate that with either Winter or Valentine, Nebraska. Indian Health Services in Rosebud does do some deliveries, but it's mostly kind of an emergent situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucas. And with that, we do need to wrap up, and thank you for being here this morning. And if I could ask you to be sure to sign in at the podium there, just to be sure we have names spelled right and that type of thing. Our secretary kind of insists on that. So if you wouldn't mind doing that. And again, thank you for being here, and thank you for being at the Senate Health yesterday. With that, I would remind committee members we will meet on Tuesday morning. We will meet at 7:45 as usual. Right now we have two Senate bills, and possibly we'll see this afternoon if there's any further ones assigned, and then we'll post the agenda after session this afternoon.
7:45.
Well, I was going to say 7:45, but people are giving me a bad time about that, Representative Lucas. It sounds so much earlier when I say it like that. So any further committee questions? Do you, Representative Boomgarten, do you have a introduction there quickly?
Let's say your name.
O-W-E-N.
Yep. Oh, and
Jeremy. You've been spelling around the house, Representative Boomgarten.
He gets to go home today.
Thank you very much. With that, I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
Second. So moved.
So moved by Representative Mosier and seconded by
Representative
Blake. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. We'll see you on Tuesday.